And welcome to another edition of Odyssey. I'm your host, Mike Schultz. We talk about ancient and modern mysteries, and tonight the topic is Planet X, or Nibiru. And just on a personal note, when I was going to school and learning the planets in the first grade, I remember learning 10 planets. The one beyond Pluto was Planet X, and I went to a public school in California, so it's kind of a little interesting anecdote. Much later, I began to study all about it. So what I've done tonight is I've brought in a researcher who has studied this field for many years, this Planet X, and his name is Al Kay. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, why don't you tell me a bit about your background and how you got into Nibiru?
My background is in sociology. I taught sociology and psychology classes at the college and university level for over 15 years in Northern California. And subsequently, since I was steeped in research of various kinds, I got involved in looking into the paranormal metaphysical field and discovered Zechariah Sitchin's book about 5-6 years ago, and that kind of kicked off my foray into the topic of Planet X.
Right, and when they're on the shelves, they look like fictional books, don't they? And I had always thought it was a fictional science fiction series or something.
Well, you know, I saw it on the shelf amongst the other books that I read in that field, and I passed it by because I heard that it was from a historical approach. I'm not really a history buff, but eventually I did read it, and it is, of course, an account of the Sumerian civilization, which predated the Egyptian civilization.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't you tell me kind of like the basic theory about Planet X, like where is it in our universe, etc.?
Well, you know, there's different opinions about, first of all, does Planet X exist?
Yes.
And there's no doubt in my mind that it does, and I'll say why in a few minutes.
But, okay.
For the most part, the scientific community denies the existence of Planet X.
Yes.
So we're up against that, that kind of misinformation or disinformation or basic censorship in most media. So you don't really hear about Planet X unless you seek it out. There's websites about it on the Internet, and there's, of course, Sitchin's book. And I understand he's come out with a new book recently about 12th Planet.
Right. Well, it would certainly open up a Pandora's box, wouldn't it, if it were on the nightly news?
Oh, yeah, for sure. An interesting thing happened to me personally. Someone told me that while they were in the hospital, this was about a year ago, the TV was on, and Planet X was going to be shown. It was like a list of different topics.
Right.
And Planet X was on there, but it was never actually aired. And then yesterday, I saw Planet X in the TV guide, but it had nothing to do with Planet X, you know. It had to do with X Sports.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I thought it would be misleading.
Well, the basic theory is it comes around every 3,600 years, correct?
Right, yeah, and according to my research, it's in our solar system. It entered into our solar system in 1983, and there was an article in the Washington Post and the New York Times about that time, in the year of 83, that acknowledged the entrance of a mysterious planet, and they did refer to it as Planet X because there was disturbance in the outer planets of Neptune and Uranus in terms of their orbit, and so they actually identified it as, or they kind of questioned, is this Planet X? And that was about the only exposure that I could find that was in the mainstream media. There was no follow-up articles. There have been a few, like in Discovery magazine and that kind of thing, but for the most part, there hasn't been much information. So the latest information that I've been able to garner is through the Internet, for the most part, and various sites state that Planet X is presently in our solar system. It's made an orbit around the sun. It's near Mercury, and it's approaching Earth, and we'll probably be able to see it in the sky from the southern hemisphere anyway next year, probably around summertime, and then in 2010 and 11, it's going to be more apparent as it gets closer.
Right. Now, so you believe 2012, that kind of magic year, is when it would sweep by us then?
It'll probably make its closest approach by 2012 or earlier, yeah.
Okay, well, let's go back then 3,600 years from 2012 and talk about what was happening then.
This is where people who are listening should read Velikovsky's work, Emmanuel Velikovsky, who is a Russian doctor, actually, but he delved into geological changes that occurred 3,600 years ago, and he documents those changes in his two books, Earth and Upheaval and Worlds in Collision. Earth and Upheaval, in particular, focuses on the geological changes that he was able to identify globally, and he concluded, although he didn't say that Planet X was the culprit, he did speculate that it was extraterrestrial in origin, and I think he concluded that it was a result of an asteroid or a comet colliding with Mars that caused an orb to you know break off from Mars, and he thinks that's the origin of Venus. Of course, I haven't come to that conclusion. I don't think it's correct. Planet X originates from the Orion, the constellation of Orion, and it has a 3,600-year elliptical orbit, and it reaches our solar system every 3,600 years. But Velikovsky did not actually identify Planet X as the reason for the catastrophic changes.
I see. So that would take us back to the year about 1600 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us what was going on geologically and kind of politically in the world at that time.
Well, it's interesting, although, again, as far as historical chronology about the Exodus, when the Exodus occurred, it varies from person to person, whoever's doing the research, but I concluded that the Exodus occurred in Egypt around 1600 B.C. I think specifically, I narrowed it down to 1628 B.C. is when the earth changes took place, particularly in Greece or south of Greece in the Aegean Sea. Santorini volcano.
Massive explosion, right?
A massive, like a super volcano eruption. And super volcanoes put out tremendous amount of ash and lava, and even one eruption such as the Santorini could have a dramatic impact on climate in terms of blocking out the sun for weeks, months, maybe years. So that was one incident or one change that took place was the eruption of Santorini. But Velikovsky points out that change took place globally, not just there in Greece, which affected the Mediterranean area, but it, he cites evidence of, for example, tropical species, whether it be flora or fauna, being found in the Arctic region. And mammals, marine life, being found on the tops of mountains, you know, like thousands of feet up. Even in the Himalayas, seashells and mollusks have been found at high altitudes. So he goes into extensive detail, and besides sea life, geologically speaking, there's various ways to determine climate change. And I have a list here, ice core samples that go back 250,000 years, sediments and sedimentary rock, pollen, tree rings, historical data. All these are used to determine climate and temperature. So we're talking about, you know, scientific methods here that are able to pinpoint specific changes that occur at certain times.
Well, what about the Jews crossing the desert and this whole parting of the Red Sea? Could this be a massive tidal wave that occurred when Nibiru or Planet X went by?
Well, that's speculation that that's what happened, that the Red Sea it's actually the Reed Sea. I don't know if it's the Red Sea or it's in the area of the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. I've read that the proper location is the Reed Sea, which is in the Arabian Peninsula there. It's very possible that Nibiru was passing at the time of the Exodus, which caused a pole shift of some degree. It could have been, some pole shifts have been 180 degrees, some less, so like 90 degrees or 45 degrees. So we're talking actually about a geological pole shift because of the tremendous magnetic and gravitational force field of Nibiru, or Planet X, when it comes close to Earth, that these cataclysmic changes do occur. So it's very possible that the there was a receding of the waters because of the pole shift in that area, which who knows how long. That might have been minutes, or it could have been hours. And then the water came back, because with a pole shift, you have tectonic plate subduction. And one plate goes over another plate, and which means along the continental shelf there's massive water displacement, or it could happen at a sea, you know, an inland sea.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible that Nibiru was the cause of the parting of the sea. Yeah.
Right. I think we should mention that Sitchin refers to it as the planet of the crossing. And for those of us who study ancient history, like myself, the cross is a universal symbol way beyond Christianity and Jesus all across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And do you see this as referring to the planet of the crossing, the cross, originally?
I really don't know about that. I do know that Planet X has had many names associated with it, and that's one of them, Planet of the Crossing, because it is a rogue planet. Now, I think planet, the idea of a planet, is really a misconception. Some people think that this orb that enters into our solar system every 3,600 years is a planet. Now, I don't think it's a planet. I think it's a starship.
Oh, interesting.
Which gives it a whole different complexion, so to speak. I don't think it's a comet. I don't think it's a planet. I think it's a starship, which seems just extraordinary considering the size of it, which it's nearly the size of Jupiter. You know,
right.
It's humongous. And then, you know, I've gotten feedback, well, if it's that large, we'd be able to see it if it's, you know, close to the Earth now, if it's close to Mercury. The reason why we can't see it for most of the time is because it's right in front of the sun. Now, when the sun is out, you cannot look at the sun. Anything in front of the sun, you would not be able to see because your eyes cannot handle that kind of intensity. So it's approaching from the elliptical or the eclipse, the middle part of the sun. Because of the way the sun reflects light, it's nearly invisible. Other than dawn and dusk for maybe a minute. That's why there are photographs of it on the Internet.
I see. There are good photographs of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. We'll all type that in tonight, Planet X Nibiru.
Yeah, just type in Planet X plus photos, and you'll find many, many photos. People have taken photos from different parts of the world.
Okay. So you said at the beginning of the interview you were sure that it exists. What is your documentation that makes you certain?
Well, the photos.
Uh-huh.
And most recently I've made contact with somebody. I can't mention his name. I want to protect his privacy.
Okay.
But he knows quite a few people in high places. And he called an astronomer that works at MIT and asked him about Planet X. And the man said yes, he'd seen it through his telescope. And this is like within the last month. So, and he said it was a little larger than our moon, but we don't know how much magnification he was working with there, you know, how far, as I say, I think it's near Mercury, according to one website that I've been checking out. And so we have verification from an astronomer in MIT, the photos on the Internet, And the work of Velikovsky, although again he doesn't specifically identify Planet X, but it's been about 3,600 years since the last great global upheavals.
Right, and sure has. If you, with your permission, would you mind opening up the phone lines and taking a call or two?
That'd be fine.
Okay, so I'll give out the numbers. It's on the main webpage, as all of you know, out there in Internet land. Call 877-876-5227 with questions about Planet X or Nibiru. Okay, let's move on. So who do you believe is on this planet? Let's talk about the Anunnaki and what their goals and their kind of mission was for Earth.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mike. First of all, this information about who's on Planet X is very difficult to find. Even the websites that talk about Planet X, many of them debunk the existence. And the ones that say, yeah, it's around, that they claim it's not in our solar system, or I've only found one website, actually, maybe two or three, actually, that say that Planet X is occupied by an alien race, the Nephilim, or the Anunnaki. Sitchin identified the Nephilim, which is the term that's used in the Bible,
right,
as the Anunnaki, and they're a race of giants.
Yes.
Now, again, there's proof that giants existed on Earth, on the Internet. Just you know, type in giants or Nephilim, and you'll find several photos. I just recently came across a photo of a skull that's been unearthed that's about almost the size of a human being. And there's also photos of bones of giants, and there's reference to giants in various parts of the Bible.
David and Goliath, sure.
Yeah, there you go, David and Goliath, and maybe even Ulysses. We don't know if that's myth or fact, but I tend to suspect it was fact.
Or Samson.
Yeah.
There's the in Nevada, there's the Lovelock Caves. People might want to look into that, because many, many giant skeletons were found in those caves in Nevada. So, and Buffalo Bill Cody ran into giant bones, and the Indians told him about the giants as well. As part of my research, I came across that.
Yeah, the Paiute Indians have legends about the giants.
Right. So do you feel all this mythology among the Greeks and the Vikings and the Egyptians about the gods was basically referring to the Anunnaki?
Yeah, and I think that term gods is misleading.
There is.
Yeah, I certainly think so, because what Sitchin said about the Anunnaki was they were a race of people that exploited the Earth's minerals resources, particularly gold, and that they had a hand in creating Homo sapien. He's saying that for a slave race to do the mining, the gold mining. And so they were an oppressive group of people back then, so I don't see why we should call them gods. Even Sitchin refers to them as gods, and I think that's a...
I know. Custodians is a good term for them.
Yeah.
And I tend to fall into gods because they referred to them so constantly, and I think they believed that they were gods, the people at that time.
Well, it's understandable because they were so huge and...
Yeah.
Physically powerful as well as technologically advanced,
yes.
But they were spiritually in the Dark Ages.
Sure, just the way they were treating humanity and slaves.
Right.
So I know that the Anunnaki had their heyday in 3800 BC in Sumeria. They certainly left behind all these clay tablets, and Egypt was kind of the heyday. And in the Old Testament times, but when do you think it kind of all ended? And when did they really withdraw from humanity?
That's a good question. I think it was probably sometime during the Egyptian civilization. I guess around 1500 BC, perhaps maybe a little earlier than that. I mean, early in terms of closer to Christ's time.
Right.
Because it doesn't make sense that Planet X would do a passage in 1600 BC and wipe out their own people, you know. So there must have been another cataclysmic event, or maybe more than one, that occurred after that, I think that coincided with their leaving. Now, whether or not they're entirely gone is up to, in the air. You know, it's like there's a possibility that they left a remnant behind.
Well, that's where this discussion gets really interesting, because anyone who just is aware, has been on this planet a while, knows that it feels like a control grid.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like we're free. We go to wars all the time, but it's not like the people who want wars. It's some other place that these orders are coming down from.
Exactly.
So why don't you talk about the New World Order and this possible scenario?
Well, this is where I believe the Nephilim are still influencing world affairs. A remnant of Nephilim stayed behind.
Uh-huh.
And it's hard to prove this. I gave a talk in Bend, Oregon about a year or so ago, and one of the people that was present stated that he had heard, he had known somebody or heard through the grapevine that NASA is controlled by an 8-foot woman.
I know, if we could just get the damn photograph, you know.
Now either she's a basketball player or she's a Nephilim.
Well, you hear stories like this, and I've been researching this a long time, and you do hear stories, you know, behind the scenes. But
yeah.
It's hard, because you're right, it is speculation, and we don't have hard evidence.
Well, so stuff like that's going to be covered up, you know, it's top secret.
Uh-huh, people get killed and so forth.
Yeah.
So
as far as the New World Order...
Yeah, why don't you explain what that is?
That refers to secret societies, organizations, wealthy families that have been around for centuries, go back to the Roman Empire. They're called Blue Bloods. They're mainly based in Europe, but they're very wealthy families in the United States, the Bush family being one, that have controlled world affairs. They're also called the Illuminati. They go by a lot of different names.
Yeah.
And they have various organizations, networks, that are operating behind the scenes that manipulate world affairs in all facets of life, whether it be politics, the economy, education, the media. They have a hand in everything, law. And their agenda is world domination.
Right, kind of a control grid.
Yeah.
And one of the theories goes is that these families kind of sold their souls out to the Anunnaki, perhaps made a deal for a certain amount of power here on Earth if they could kind of follow through on their orders.
Yeah, I think they're proxies. I think the Illuminati... I did a lot of research on the Illuminati.
Uh-huh.
And I also got into the role of alien groups, you know, and their influence in the world. And I do believe that some kind of deal, like you say, was struck between... the top-ranking Illuminati and the Nephilim, and the Illuminati's proxy power group.
And they're perhaps being given quite a few benefits here on Earth in exchange for carrying out some orders.
Yeah. They have tremendous wealth, not just, you know, money, gold, precious metals, but land, and they control governments amongst every nation.
Right, and of course we're getting into David Icke territory, so people should really read the books of David Icke.
For sure.
And, you know, and what about these various UFO groups? Why don't you kind of go through the main ones? I guess we'll start with the Greys.
The Greys seem to be a subservient race of the Zetas, the Zeta Reticuli.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know that we can identify any one group as all bad or all good, you know, they may have different kind of mixed agendas. But the Greys are pretty commonly identified with the abduction phenomenon, and they seem to be they have a hive mentality. They're not spiritually advanced. They are technologically advanced and perhaps psychically advanced. They communicate telepathically.
Uh-huh.
But they've used, according to my research in the abduction phenomena, they use people. that they abduct for sexual or genetic experiments. You know, and it could be that the reason why they're taking genetic samples from men and women who are abducted is that they, for some reason, are not able to reproduce themselves without our genetic material.
Mm-hmm.
So they might need us for their, you know, continued survival and procreation. But nevertheless, I'm not saying that's a positive thing. You know, nobody wants to be abducted.
No.
And have probes and, you know, and implants and scoops on their body. And I mean, some people have serious ailments afterwards, you know, cancer and whatnot.
Sure, but the Greys seem to be out front, getting the most publicity, and the public, if they know about any one group, it would be the Greys, probably.
Yeah, the Greys seem to be prominent. I think there's many different alien groups that are presently inhabiting or visiting the Earth, and they have been here for perhaps millions of years, either as observers or utilizing our natural resources, buried underneath the ocean, in various subterranean dwellings on the Earth. And so I do believe that they've had a prominent role in influencing human development,
mm-hmm.
whether it be direct intervention or otherwise.
Right. And what do you make of all this dragon mythology when you study the ancient texts and, for instance, the Chinese referred to the dragon gods? How does that fit in?
Well, I really don't know much about that. The dragon is... another term, the red dragon, is associated with Planet X. I'm not sure if they're related, though, as far as Chinese mythology. I don't know much about that. Yeah.
Okay, and so the pyramids that were built all around the world thousands of years ago, do you believe that's the architecture of the Anunnaki?
Very possible, yes, that mm-hmm. they're astronomical sites to help them, you know, come onto the Earth. They have special properties, the pyramids too, of course, as far as preservation,
mm-hmm.
and they have sacred geometry associated with them. But I think they have more to do with energy fields directed into space, particularly towards the constellation of Orion and Sirius.
Okay. Now, do you feel, Nibiru, every time it comes across the Earth, that it causes disaster, or sometimes maybe it doesn't? It just depends on the rotation each time.
It seems to me that every time Nibiru comes close to Earth, there's cataclysmic change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not into, you know, scaring people.
Right.
Because I've had that comment on my posting on the Internet there, you know,
mm-hmm.
he's a fearmonger, that kind of thing. No, I'm not. I'm into awareness, you know. My position about people being afraid of this information is, well, we have to confront our fears if, in fact, this is real. You know, we can't run away from it. It's not going to make any difference if we run away from it.
Yeah, and so what do you make of... I mean, just going, do you think Hollywood and the media is slowly trying to disseminate UFO information to the public?
Oh, yeah, obviously with, you know, E.T. in 2001 and mm-hmm. Star Wars and stuff, they're kind of acclimating. Plus the other movies that have come out recently about, you know, cataclysms, plagues, stuff like that.
Right.
I think it's, in a way, preparing us for what's on the horizon. Of course, they're doing it in such a way that it's like entertainment. You know, it shouldn't be entertainment. It should be considered scientific information. People should do the exploration themselves, look things up. You know, like I've spent 4 or 5 years doing a lot of reading in this topic.
Yeah, and how do we put a positive spin on this and do some activism in regards to Planet X?
Okay, well, the first step is for people to check things out themselves, because it is incredible. It's hard to believe, you know, a lot of the things that I've talked about tonight, as far as cataclysms and giants and the approach Planet X, it's really hard to swallow. So I suggest that people look into it themselves. There's plenty of information on the Internet. A good place to start is the 12th planet, with Zechariah Sitchin's book and Velikovsky's books, because I think they're, you know, scientifically sound and documented. And then check out Planet X on the Internet. There's a lot of different opinions about it. And also, the Nephilim, there's different opinions about them. So people can come to their own conclusions. Now, that's the first step, is awareness. And once there's awareness, and then there's the actual sighting of Planet X in the near future, in the next year or two, and now people who've done their homework will know, I know something about Planet X, you know. It's not going to be a big shock, and perhaps they won't be panicked by it. And at some point in time, humanity is going to have to realize that Planet X is a threat, not just to the Earth, but to, you know, human survival. And we're going to have to collectively act in order to assure our continuation.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, this is the first time in history that millions of citizens of the Earth have become aware of this, because really with the book and the film Chariots of the Gods in the 60s, that blew open a huge hole in consciousness.
Right.
And millions of people actually do know about what we're talking about. So this is the first time the public has had this information.
I know. It's been hidden from them, and it's terrible how this topic in particular is censored, or it's distorted and debunked. So it's hard to get an accurate picture of what's going on. People should not be intimidated by this. I am not. You know, even though it sounds horrendous, I do get my moments of anxiety, but for the most part, I just try to collect as much information and validation of the reality as possible so I can share that with people.
Well, I think what happens is I've been doing this for 7 years, and you start walking down this maze, and then you turn a few corners in the maze, and you have a choice. You can either go back or you can keep going. And I've chosen to keep going, and I'm going to follow it to the end.
Great.
I'm going to see where the maze leads at the end. And I meet people along the way, and I always instantly know what they're talking about. Like, you're one of the people in the maze who's deep inside of it with me. I've never met you, but we can talk on this level.
Right.
And you meet people like that on this journey. So I'm just going to follow it to the end.
Good for you.
And the hard part is there's no church institution or academic institution that will touch these topics.
Right.
Unless it's purely mythology.
I have an
Egyptian mythology.
I have a vision of the future I'd like to share with you.
Okay.
That things are going to kind of crumble for a while as far as dramatic climate change, weather changes, you know, extreme weather, more volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, and that kind of thing. It's going to reach a point where people are going to say, now something's going on here, it's not normal.
Right.
You know, and then we'll see Planet X in the sky, at least some of us will, next year, and then as it gets closer, it'll become more apparent, and people are going to want to know what it's all about. So you and I are fortunate in that regard, because we've done our homework, we know what's going on. Hopefully we'll be in a position to inform others, you know, on a more massive scale. I mean, I don't want to sound delusional about it, but that has to happen. The people who are in the vanguard, such as you and I, have to take the lead in informing others about what's going on.
Yeah, I think that is hopefully happening within the new age and the kind of cutting-edge Internet community. I'm hoping it is. And tonight's a good step, actually.
Yeah.
Well, any last thoughts on Planet X, Anunnaki, you want to share?
Well, if people want to know what I said about it on the Internet, I don't have a website, but I have a posting. It's called Planet X and the Upcoming Pole Shift, which, you know, you can use Yahoo search. And I've made comments from various sources, which some of them go beyond what we talked about tonight, so they can check that out. And I encourage people to do the reading, you know, and look into it.
All right. Well, if you come across any really amazing information or pictures, email me, and I'll put it on the air again. But, Alkay, I appreciate this very enlightening talk. Thank you for joining us on Odyssey.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, take care.
Yeah.
Good night. All right, that was Alkay from Oregon as well as myself, and I hope you all enjoyed that speculative conversation, but based on a lot of evidence. And as you know, he was an academic scholar and a college professor. So thank you, Al Kay, for joining us. And I want to remind the listeners to go to my webpage, Odyssey. And I have three films that I produced on ancient mysteries and this whole theory of Planet X and the Nibiru and the Nephilim and the Anunnaki. And it's really important to know this theory. It was kind of laid out, once again, at Chariots of the Gods. But I have a lot of pictures, and I kind of take you through it step by step as a narrative. So at least you know the theory. And whether you agree with it or not is up to you. That's your choice. But I feel that it's important that everyone at least know this theory that millions of people are researching and looking into. So the first film is The Sands of Time. That's the best one to start with. And then The Temples of Stone is my second one, more advanced material. My latest one is Mystery Islands, some more advanced material as well. Lots of pictures in my DVD. So please support the show and do go to my webpage on Odyssey, Mondays at 8 p.m. And you can purchase it right there with your PayPal button. Just hit PayPal. It's $20. That includes shipping, and I will send it right out to you. And once again, that really helps me support this show, because I'm the sponsor of this show. So anyway, I'd like to use the remaining time. I've never really done this, but you know, tonight I'm in a little bit of a pensive mood, and Planet X really kind of hits home to me. It's a really important topic, and I just want to tell my kind of personal story and how I got involved in all of this, because believe me, I am the last candidate to get involved in all of this research in this field. There was nothing in my upbringing to prepare me for this life that I'm leading. And basically, I'm from Southern California. And once again, my name is Mike Schultz. I'm the host of Odyssey. And had a very, very traditional upbringing in a mainline Protestant church, learning all about the Old Testament and the traditional stories, and a very traditional public school education, and even in the Cal State College system, all the way through. So the first 20 years of my life, it was the church and state and their kind of traditional versions of what's happening on this earth and how we got here. And a lot of it had to do with a story about God and Adam and Eve in a garden, and one of them eating an apple, and that was sinful, and mankind was condemned for eating that apple, and there was a snake there tempting them, and it seemed like an allegory or at the time, but when you're told that by powerful adults and you're 5 years old, and it kind of gets imprinted in your mind, I would say, like an imprint, and you believe it, and so you go forward. And once again, in the first grade, I think the first little clue I had something might be different was that I learned 10 planets. I learned beyond Pluto was Planet X. It was in my school books and school text, and so I kind of tucked that in the back of my mind. I was always wondering about Planet X is what it was referred to in the textbook. And then, at some point in my youth, and I can't really pinpoint when it was, I may have been 10 years old, but I saw the film Chariots of the Gods, and I know most of you have seen it too at some point. It went into wide distribution. I believe it was shown on PBS, on television. This was before, like, cable. And when I saw those Nazca lines, those incredible pictures of animals and strange, you know, humans out in the desert in Peru, and they really could only be seen by air, and then you saw those airstrips that were built, that was stunning to me. And when Chariots of the Gods really gets into the advanced technology of the pyramids, it planted another seed in my mind. It was like, well, I think there may have been some advanced group here a long time ago and wasn't prepared to deal with any of this research at that point. When you're a kid, you know, you want to ride your skateboard and play baseball and whatever. And so it just got filed back for later. And so that's what happened. But it made an impact at the time with a lot of people. And I grew up in a conservative community, but a lot of people saw it when I was growing up. And then, once again, I had this traditional Christian background, but about age 12, my dad just walks up to me and he hands me this book. He goes, I want you to read this book. And it was called Serpentine. It had a snake on the cover of the book. And it was a nonfiction book, and it was about a mass murderer. It was a true story about a killer. And he went around Thailand and Nepal and India in the 1970s, and he murdered a lot of tourists. It's an amazing, amazing book, and it's not a book about death. Really, it's a book about life. Because there's about 100 different characters in this book, and it talks about people from the West in the 1970s who were searching, who were going to the East, to India. They were travelers on a spiritual journey. They were looking into Buddhism and reincarnation and Hinduism and exploring metaphysics. And this was my first introduction to these whole philosophies and the New Age movement. So of all people, my kind of real traditional Christian father gave me this book, Serpentine, and I highly recommend you read it. It is nonfiction. And one of the characters in the book, her name was Jenny, she was a hippie and explored all about karma and reincarnation and hypnosis and yin and yang and meditation. And I just identified with her and her journey, and she ended up moving to Seattle and then saving a lot of money and going on a trip to Nepal, a journey to join a Buddhist monastery. And on her last night of freedom, she decides to go dancing in a disco just one last time and just, to have some hedonistic fun. And she meets this killer, this murderer, and he abducts her and kills her. And she's found the next day floating on the sand in the beach. Very tragic, true story, but just a riveting book that got me thinking and starting me and my journey looking to the East, to alternative philosophies. So then I get a bit older, about 17, and I'm working in a very large theater in high school, in a kind of stage crew kind of thing, running the spotlights and stuff, and different groups come in, ballet, rock bands, etc. And one day a group comes in called the Order of the Eastern Star. Okay, the stage crew, we all look at each other, what's that? You know, is that a rock band? No, it wasn't. It turns out it was the women's auxiliary of the Freemasons group. So they were fairly high-level Freemasons, and I got to kind of stand there in the spotlight booth for a couple of days and watch them at work, and they were very organized and very businesslike, and it was mostly women, but there were some men there too. And they were involved in rituals. I remember they put a big, kind of like a rug on the stage with a big circle and a star in it. It was basically a pentagram. And they would stand around the pentagram and call upon the powers of the East and the West and the North and the South. And, you know, these were professional adults, and some of them were involved in city government or city councils and their judges or whatever. These were not like hippies or rockers or anything like that. They were, and they knew exactly what they were doing, and they were highly organized, and they were engaged in, I would call it pagan ritual type activities. So that was interesting to me. I started, I guess, wanting to know a bit more about the Freemasons and what they were about. I mean, certainly where I grew up, they were these stone granite chambers and temples in each community, and I never saw anyone go in and out of them, and there was never any explanation for really what they were doing there. Supposedly they were charitable and had picnics and things. I never saw any of that. They were just these silent monoliths, and that were kind of creepy, or I just had a strange feeling, and no one would talk about them. So anyway, so then I go into college and explore more into metaphysics, and bit by bit, and the Christianity, you know, I was in it for so long, but I honestly feel that a lot of it is fear-based. They've set up this character of Jehovah as someone who can be benevolent but also angry and condemning, and can someone you need to be very fearful of. And if you read the Old Testament stories, it is very frightening what happens with just destruction and mayhem and war, and Jehovah maybe destroying a whole city like Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham begging him not to, and just saying, well, what if there's 10 righteous people there? Won't you save the city? And Jehovah's like, no, I'm not going to. I'm going to blow it all up. And he does. So for me, it was like a fear-based religion, although it's loving and beautiful and kind. And there's a lot. I understand why Jesus came later and brought about a new message. But anyway, I do believe Jehovah is one of these Anunnaki we were talking about earlier. And then this whole character of Satan, as I came to study this whole subject and the clay tablets of Samaria, I believe the snake is also one of the Anunnaki, but actually one of the more helpful ones, and his name was Enki. And he was symbolized by the snake in ancient times, and he was trying to help Adam and Eve and give them knowledge of the tree of life and the tree of good and evil, and just trying to explain to them their history and morals, and it was all turned around. Some of the other custodial gods were very angry at him for trying to help humans, so he was demonized at that point, and the snake was made to be this evil, horrible creature, and it all got flipped around. And so anyway, the clay tablets certainly illuminate the Old Testament and give a lot more detail to it. I highly recommend you read Sitchin's latest book, The Lost Book of Enki, for some background detail. And so anyway, it just kind of went from there. I mean, I went into traditional jobs as an adult working in healthcare, and once just had a regular life, although I was exploring metaphysics, and Shirley MacLaine was a pretty big influence. And she went to Peru and had interesting UFO sightings, and that was helpful to me, actually, her experiences and her candor and her humor and talking and explaining about reincarnation and actually how it had been taken out of the Bible in one of the councils. And then I remember one night I was watching, like, this was the late 1980s, I was watching the Johnny Carson show when Carson was still on, and Whitley Strieber came on and he was talking about UFOs, and he had this number one book called Communion. And Carson, I mean, he did not make fun of him. I mean, you would think he would, but he really had, like, a serious look in his face and, tell me your story, tell me all about this. And Carson listened to Whitley Strieber in a very honest manner talk about UFOs and abductions and the Greys and the aliens. And to me, I think at that point, things shifted and people started to believe in UFOs more. And before then, you were pretty much crazy. Like, we're going to lock you up in an institution. You're mentally ill, you know, if you believe in UFOs. But I think with the Shirley MacLaine books and the Strieber and going on Carson, to me that was kind of like a little bit of a shifting point. And then, you know, crop circles started to occur more and more and more, and they started to become very complex in design. They weren't just like circles or squares or triangles anymore. They were very elaborate geometrical designs that really could not be made by a group of humans. Or if they were, then that's a pretty massive conspiracy theory when you think about it, to organize a group of people anonymously to go out in the field and create a perfect design in the few hours of night and all leave, run away, and leave it there in the morning. So crop circles were in the back of my mind. I wasn't studying them seriously, but I knew that they were getting more complex, and the media dropped them at a certain point. The media stopped reporting on them. This was in the early 90s, and would no longer report on the phenomena. You kind of had to buy books, or this was really almost pre-internet, and just do your own little research. But I was always the type to go to the back of a bookstore, and so I would find stuff like this, you know, even pre-internet. So then 2000 comes around. I'm still working in healthcare, and I think I met two people around 2001. This was right before the attack on September 11th, that year, 2001. So I'm working in healthcare, and I meet this older lady. She's really hip. She's been around, and she starts talking about kind of like the New World Order to me, kind of like this one world government, and how people are kind of like slaves or robotic, or just following kind of orders and things happening behind the scenes. It was just very intriguing little comments she would make from time to time. And I'm extremely curious, so I picked up on these little things. And one day she goes, "Oh, Mike, you know, have you ever read a book called Robots Rebellion?" And I said, "No, I've never heard of it." And she said, "Oh, okay, okay, okay." And then she just walked away. And that's probably the best thing she could have done. Instead of trying to sell me on the book, she just walked away. So I'm left with, okay, what's that? What's a Robots Rebellion? And then I just dropped it. And then I couldn't get it out of my mind for, like, 2 months. this little voice in my head would say, Robots Rebellion, Robots Rebellion, you know, kind of throughout the day. So finally, I tracked it down. It was a David Icke book. It was his first book. And I just started reading David Icke. And a lot of people kind of make a shift at that point. Sometimes it's called going out of the matrix, and kind of traditional political parties like, oh, conservative versus liberal, or Republican versus Democrat is such a big fight. And then David Icke talks about how, well, no, not really. It's kind of the same party, and they're just playing a game with us. And he talks about the New World Order and this one world government. And he really provides a lot of documentation in his research. And so it's hard to kind of toss aside his work, actually. And I separate his UFO theories from his New World Order research, actually, because that's what I was initially drawn to. I learned about the Bilderbergs and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission. I had never heard of any of these things, and I was a pretty well-informed person, a college degree, and I read the newspaper every day. And then I walked in. I used to go to this real independent bookstore and talk to the owner, and one day he just says, oh, Mike, do you know that our Federal Reserve banking system, it's controlled by these secret families, the Rockefellers. They took it over. And I'm like, oh, no way. That could never, never be. I would have heard about it. You know, I would have heard about it in my economics class in college. And, you know, he hands me a book called Creature from Jekyll Island, and it's just stunning. It's when you hear the story about how these wealthy secret families, these billionaires, took over control of our money system, and how the Federal Reserve is not part of our federal government. Federal is simply an adjective. It's like Federal Express is not a part of our government. You know, it's just an adjective. Anyone can put federal on anything. And how they have changed our money system completely and taken us off of gold and silver, and really manipulated our economy for the past 90 years. And the media is nowhere to be found in this story. So, one other thing that did happen when I was growing up is I did know that there are some pretty massive media cover-ups, because I am from Los Angeles, and I knew that there was streetcars in L.A. We used to have really good public transportation in the 20s and 30s, and it was all taken out and dismantled by auto companies and tire companies. So, and the media never reported on that. So people from Los Angeles, a lot of people know that story and how the media and the press won't report on certain huge stories or exposés, even though they could certainly, win a Pulitzer Prize or whatever. I mean, there's certain stories that are off limits regarding big money and government. So I was kind of shaken up in 2001, right before September 11th. And then when that happened, I initially believed the story. But then I think within a year, I was kind of hooked up with people through this bookstore who were showing me some kind of raw video footage and tapes and lectures, how 9-1-1 was, the media didn't really report what happened with it, and how it was a government operation. And I learned about our shadow government, how there is a group behind the scenes, like the NSA, for example, kind of manipulating events. So that's kind of my story. And then from then on, in the past 7 years, I've, you know, been involved in metaphysics and the New Age movement, which is really positive, and I don't like dwell or wallow in conspiracy theories because it's dark, but I do want to know about it and share it and spread the word. And then I joined the Granada Forum in Los Angeles, which is a great group. It's still there, Granada Forum, if you want to check it out. And they have meetings and lectures on this subject. And you kind of get hooked up through a grapevine. There's an excellent magazine called Nexus. And it's on the newsstands. You can find it. It's out of Australia. So check out Nexus if you want to read more about this, or my DVDs really provide an excellent summation of this whole kind of alternative background theory that's come out really since 1966, the publication of the book Chariots of the Gods, and this whole field that's developed. And we're really grateful for the internet, of course, and many, many websites that are opening up the truth. I mean, BBS Radio has a great website. There's all kinds of links on the main page. Like Jeff Rentz is a great reporter, and he does report on these subjects, like the Anunnaki and the Nephilim and the giants. And if there is a find of like giant bones or something, Jeff Rentz will report on it. So he's at Rentz.com, R E N hesse.com. So that's kind of my personal story. I've never really told it on the air, but like I said, tonight I'm in a bit of a thoughtful mood, and I thought it was really good. So I was inspired to make these three films, and please do check them out on my site on BBS Radio. Click on Odyssey, Mondays at 8. That will take you to the webpage and my three films, and please check them out. So we're all out of time, and I appreciate you joining me on Odyssey tonight, talking about Planet X, and I will see you soon. Take care and good night.